I put it to you that you hate freedom. That's what I put to you. I think you hate freedom and you want to tell people what they can and can't do, and that you are the enemy of freedom. What do you say about that?
F*** you. That's what I say about that. Hello, Dave!
Hello, Ollie!
Hello! How are you, my little Welsh dragon?
Lovely boys, lovely boys, lovely, innit? I'm not really Welsh, but I'm kind of half your Welsh, so I'm basking in the glory of the lovely Welsh boys and their lovely Welsh Welshiness. Play the Happy Wales music.
Oh, okay. Should we tell people what they're listening to? This isn't a podcast about Wales and football. This is Sustainababble. Welcome to Sustainababble number 55?
55, that's right. We are your friendly little environment podcast about people and the planet and why it's all so confusing and can't people talk a bit of sense. And what have we got coming up this week? Oh,
well, Dave, we are going to be talking about, some pigs. Some pigs that are not going to have lots of antibiotics in them, which are a drug, yeah? Antibiotics.
Yeah.
We're also going to be talking about how in the UK we've gone sort of 60 years cold turkey on on our air pollution sort. Or have we? And we're also going to be talking about some schadenfreude where Boris Johnson was properly needled by one of his conservative colleagues. And we're going to be talking about something that the UK government might have done, which is good, which makes me think I'm on drugs. I must have taken a lot of drugs because I think David Cameron and co. have done a good thing for climate change. So it's high times for Sustainababble this week. Ooh.
Very good. Oh, we do work for environmental charities, but these are very much our own views, aren't they?
Very much so, yeah.
Yes, very much. Yeah. So if you've got any problems with anything...
Don't get paid to think what these thoughts are.
If you've got any problem with anything you're about to hear, take it up with us and not with anyone that we work for, yes?
Okay, very good. Off we go. It's time to get the munchies.
Sustainababble of the week.
So, Sustainababble of the week. This is the section where we have a little look every single week to see if somebody has been talking utter hogwash. That's actually a really good... I didn't even do that on purpose. Hogwash about green stuff. Usually people who aren't very green trying to sound a bit green. And we say this is babble. What have we got this week, Dave?
Piggies. Piggies, 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 piggies.
Hogwash.
Hogwash. Do you know what pigs are?
I feel like this is a trick question, but I'm going to say yes.
Yes.
I do. I feel like Alan Davis must feel every single week on QI. Someone clever asks what appears to be a simple question. You give a straightforward answer in the full knowledge that a big siren's going to go off.
Okay, well, tell the class. What is a pig?
A pig is a farm animal.
No, it isn't. A pig is an animal which we put on farms. A pig is not a farm animal. A pig is an animal. It's a nice, happy, pretty pig. It's a piggy wiggy. It's a piggy piggy wig 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 with its nice curly tails. It's not a farm. This is the thing. I knew you'd get... Where's that? Hang on. I'm going to play the noise. I knew you'd get it wrong, right? Because it's not...
Hang on a minute. Are the pigs that we're talking about... would they exist in their current genetic makeup in the wild? No, they have been bred surely to be the kind of pigs that they are on farms.
Well, okay, all right, yes, fine, okay,
thank
look,
you.
Fine, but they are still animals. The point is, they're animals, right? And we put them into farms and factory farms and all sorts of stuff like that, and we chop them into bits and we make bacon out of them, and everyone goes bacon, bacon, yum, except people who don't, right?
Correct.
Yes. And what is one of the biggest problems that you can think of, apart from the fact that militant vegans like me think it's all horrible, what can you think is a big problem of doing all of that all?
Well, there are lots of problems. One of the problems is that it creates an awful lot of greenhouse gases.
Mm-hmm. Piggy farts.
Piggy farts, yes. But piggy also poo. A lot of rainforest is chopped down to make space to grow food for the piggies.
Very good.
That's another problem. Yeah. But there's also a very big problem, which is kind of all over industrial farming, that they get pumped full of lots of antibiotics, not to cure illnesses they've got usually, but to prevent them from getting them in the first place. And I think also to sort of help fatten them up a bit.
And it's a bad thing, all this antibiotic stuff, right, Ol?
Mm-hmm.
Because what it does is it does a couple of things. Firstly, it's sort of an excuse for keeping piggywigs in horrible conditions. So you've got like loads of piggywigs all buttressed up together like you would get in a school if you had lots of kids all just like with their snotty faces all up in each other's snotty faces. It all get ill, right? Yeah. So pumping them all full of antibiotics sort of helps you with that a bit. And it's a bit, you know, you do something horrible and to get around, and instead of stopping doing the horrible thing, you just pump them full of drugs. And the other thing it does is that all of those drugs, obviously, piggywigs get chopped up and people eat the piggywigs. And then all of the drugs that the piggywigs had are in the likes of us. Well, not us, because we don't eat piggywigs, but you take my point, right?
I take your point, yeah.
And what does that mean?
Beings with antibiotics in them. Well, that means that the bugs that these antibiotics are supposed to kill are going to get all resistant, aren't they? Because there's going to be too many of these antibiotics swilling around.
No, that's right. Oh, swilling. Swilling.
Yeah. I am on fire.
So antibiotic resistance is a proper massive problem, right? There is a £10 million prize, a thing called the Longitude Prize, which is available.
Wow, that's a good prize.
A good prize, isn't it, for solving the problem of antibiotic resistance, right?
Yeah, which most prizes are like book tokens, aren't they? Or kind of 15% off at Aldi.
Yes, right. This one is £10 million. And it's a bit of a weird way round prize in that what we do is we have horrible factory farms which are making far too much meat when we all eat far too much meat, and that's making us ill and fat. And then all the antibiotics that they give to the piggywigs ends up in us, and then they have to make a prize to go, well, how do we deal with the problem of that then, right? The problem of that is stop giving so much antibiotics to the piggywigs, and to do that, you should stop having horrible factory farms and eating so much meat. But people don't want to do that.
But is this prize just about antibiotics in food, or is it about the bigger problem of resistance to antibiotics?
The bigger problem.
General,
it's the bigger problem.
You know, GPs are increasingly, well, I don't think it's really GPs, but in the medical profession, too many antibiotics are being given out to people too often, and that in itself is a problem, right?
Yeah, we're over-medicating. That is a thing, right?
Yeah.
But antibiotics off of food is a thing. So, where does the babble come in? Well, the babble comes in with a company called Karo. Karo? I think they're called Karo.
Yeah, K-A-R-R-O.
What are one of certainly the world's, I think, but definitely one of the UK's biggest pork processors.
They bill themselves apparently as a leading pork processor.
So what Karo have done is they have registered a trademark, because they are saying they want to go antibiotic free.
Oh, they want free antibiotics?
No, they don't want. They intend to market some sorts of meat that are antibiotic free. So you would be able to go to a shop and you would buy your deceased pig product, and it would have on it. Well, what will it have on it? What will the logo be? Do you think maybe a picture of a drug that might be on there? Or
yeah, maybe it could be a picture of a large syringe kind of dripping menacingly.
Yeah,
that'd be
and
good,
with one of those, you know, with the red circle and across through it, basically. It isn't.
Well,
that.
I tell you what, I've got it on my screen. Actually, I'm staring at a website I can't say I go to very often, the Intellectual Property Office of Her Majesty's Government.
Three words that are not usually associated with you, if I may say so.
Get me two pencils and a pair of underpants.
So I'm staring at the Intellectual Property Office of Her Majesty's Government, and on that page, Caro's little thingamajig where they've registered the trademark is a picture of a smiling pig. and it, above its little ears, it says antibiotic free in that sort of crayon-y, chalky writing that children use, presumably signifying that this is all happy and lovely and delightful.
A smiling pig.
Smiling pig, Dave, yeah.
A smiling pig.
Because this one hasn't had its veins pumped full of antibiotics. Therefore, it's happy. It's happy about the bolt that's about to get put through its brain.
You know, it doesn't mind its shortened life being one of perpetual misery and being shipped around just so that people can have bacon that they don't need anyway. And it doesn't mind having its block knocked off at the end of it. It's ridiculous, Ol.
Dave.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to play the Militant Vegan rant, Claxon. You're doing it again.
Tofu.
Now, last week, you were as humble enough to say that you had more that you had in recent weeks had more than your fair share of militant vegan rants and vegan propaganda. So, what's going on? Why are you doing this again?
Oh, because it's annoying and it's babble. Because it's babble. The babble came to us. I didn't put the babble here. The babble was presented. Babble dropped into our lap like babble from heaven, right?
You're like a naughty kid at school that says trouble just finds you.
Babble found me in this particular instance. It was a picture of a smiling pig that's supposed to signify all is well in the world of pigs just because they haven't had their arse filled full of growth hormones or whatever the hell it is, right? It's timely. Shut up, because there's a film coming out. There's a film coming out this week, and it's called Swine, and it's looking at exactly this issue. It's looking at the issue of whether or not we feed too much antibiotics to our piggywigs and other animals, right? So it's all timely.
That sounds lighthearted and fun.
Yeah, that's right.
In this time of complete societal breakdown, that's exactly what I want to go and see at the cinema.
I'm just pointing out to you that although it was a militant vegan rant, it was one based on babble and topicality, and it's therefore allowed.
So there was a thing yesterday, Dave. There was a thing that made my brain hurt, and it was a yerp thing.
Yerp. Mm-hmm.
So we're not going to bang on about Brexit and all the horrors. Not yet, anyway. Not like we did last week. But there was this thing was a good illustration of how complicated it all is. In Yerp, there was a big old flimflam where people decided on some really, really important stuff about how many people are going to die from air pollution.
Okay, how many people are going to die from air pollution?
Well, about 250,000 across Yerp between now and 2030.
It's a lot.
Which is more than... I mean, it's not the biggest number in the world. See episode 53, maybe?
52.
What? No.
Yeah, 52.
Okay, 52. Whatever. Yeah. Well, anyway, in that episode, we discovered that the biggest number in the world is 66 billion. But this is smaller than that, 250,000, but that's still a lot of people dying because of air pollution, which is really bad. And what Yerp were doing was saying, okay, well, we could probably stop some of these pollutants going up into the air and then into people's lungs if we all act together. And they set targets which are for all of the member states.
Europe set targets?
I know, disgusting. Another reason we should get the hell out. And obviously, Europe is a big, complicated thing because you've got the Europe Parliament and the Europe Commission, which is sort of the civil servant-y bit, I guess, and the Europe Council, which is where all of the member states send their people to go and say no, basically. They just say no to stuff. Mm. Although they don't all say no to stuff, and this is kind of the point. So the Commission and the Parliament were like, do you know what? We should try and reduce these deaths more. We should have a 52% reduction in deaths. Yeah?
Not right. So, okay. Why 52% out of interest?
I don't know.
Is it all right to leave 48% of the 250,000 people dying in a soup? Why is that?
I don't know. But that was the level of the ambition.
It's such a European thing to do, isn't it? And I don't think Brexit is a very good idea. But I does say that just saying 52. I bet it was a decimal point as well. I bet it was like 52.4%.
Well, you joke. So this was the preferred position of the Parliament and the Commission. The preferred position of the Council was that it should be a 48% reduction in deaths, which means that in effect, 16,000 people, additional people, are going to die. And the position they reached was that it would be a 48.9% reduction in tax.
I was joking, but okay. Right.
Now, or was it a 49.6 reduction? Something like that. There was a 6 and a 9. There was a point. The result is, according to the brilliant people at the European Environment Bureau, that about 10,000 people are going to die who otherwise wouldn't have died if we'd have secured this 48% reduction. So it's just classic. It's classic Europe. And do you know who was pushing? Who were the primary people pushing for this ambition to be weakened?
The Chuckle Brothers.
That's right. No, not the Chuckle Brothers.
Little and large.
I always think that Mr. Juncker is a bit like a Chuckle Brother. Anyway, wasn't Juncker, but the big boys who were pushing for this weakening were, among others, the UK.
Right. Even though we're not in Europe no more.
Well, we're trying to get out of it. We're still there. But the Guardian put it thus. The UK was a key player in drafting the law, arguing for less ambition on health improvements. The emission of methane from its remit and smaller cuts in ammonia emissions, despite contrary advice from a Department for Environment, Food and Rural Affairs study.
What?
And do you know what their main concerns were?
I don't. Economic growth.
That's right. Their main concern,
not
their main
killing people would be bad for the economy.
Exactly. Their main concerns were about the high costs of NOx and
God's
particulate
sake.
Matter curbs.
So hang on. So what bits of what is that in practice then? So what you know about this stuff and I don't. In fact, I'm going to ask you some stuff about all of this now because you know right? You remember back in episode 50 where we talked about steel and you gave me the mother of all grillings just because I'd had the mistake to actually say something outside our babble universe for once that week, right? So you know about this.
I'm flattered and delighted that you referred to what I think was, you know, the equivalent of being savaged by a dead sheep as the mother of all grillings. But
yeah,
thank you.
So I'm going to ask you about some of this stuff. So what if we are going to stop these 250,000 people dying, or indeed the difference between 16,000 people dying and not dying, what is it you have to do in practice that the British government don't want to do? What is it actually that they've said, we ain't doing that?
Well, as ever, it's complicated. So this is all about a whole range of pollutants, right? So they're saying to each member state, you have to reduce each of these pollutants. And that means tackling different things. So some of the ones that get a lot of press, like nitrogen oxides, they're transport-based, basically. So you, put crudely, you need to cut the number of vehicles on your roads and you need to have cleaner vehicles that remain. So you rapidly need to get diesel out of the system because diesel is the worst when, as we keep seeing week by week, it's much worse than anyone was ever claiming before. But you also, you know, just having cars drive around regardless of their fuel means you have brake dust and you have tyre dust and we need fewer of them on the roads. And that will bring lots of benefits to the way our cities feel and how safe they are, and people will be up and about and walking and cycling. It will be lovely.
Yes,
everyone
okay.
will be smiling.
Enough of the propaganda. What else?
But other things are things like ammonia, which comes back a little bit to what we were saying earlier about the piggies. Big source of air pollution is ammonia from agriculture. Mm. And it's complicated because it's bad in and of itself, but then it's also bad when those emissions from agriculture combine with emissions from transport. So a lot of the time in the UK, we have very, very nasty episodes of air pollution in sort of March and April. And that is because the farmers in France and other bits of Western Europe are spraying their crops at that time. And that stuff goes up in the air, gets blown across to the UK, combines with our traffic-based emissions, and we get really, really nasty pollution. So you've got to tackle agriculture.
So, okay. So what's basically gone on is the British government has been one of the people saying cost too much not to kill people because we'll have to tell the farmers not to do stuff. And if we do that, they will freak out and then there won't be any bread for anyone. Yes,
exactly. And that is at the heart of this one. So as I understand it, most of the lobbying has been driven by the farming industry here because this is really about getting them to sort out their stuff as well. Obviously, the transport stuff is huge as well, but there is kind of increasing action on that. No way near enough, but we are seeing some measures to tackle transport, but there's nothing. There's nothing to have a go at farming on their emissions.
It's 60 years, I was reading, since the UK brought in a thing called the Clean Air Act. Yes?
It is, yes. There have been many, as with legislation in around, there have been many acts of the same name, basically. But the one we're talking about here is the 1956 Clean Air Act, which is viewed as a very, very important bit of legislation because it effectively stopped our towns and cities being full of coal smoke.
So it was designed to do a particular thing. It wasn't like, it shouldn't be called the Clean Air Act. It should be called the Stopping Coal Smoke Coming Out of Chimneys Act. Yes, because we still have, let me assure you, living as I do in stinky, horrible London, that we don't have clean air, right? So it hasn't worked in that sense. But it was designed to stop a particular thing, yes?
No, it has worked because you've got to see it in its context. So, I mean, since the dawn of industrialisation in the UK, where you had an astronomical increase in the amount of coal being burnt, you had very, very smoky, polluted cities. And for about 50 years, nothing was really working. There were Clean Air Acts or other bits of legislation that didn't do anything. And this one finally did. But it was really, really bad. There was a blog I was reading the other day where it said a permanent smoke haze enveloped cities like Glasgow, Leeds, London and Manchester. It blocked out the sun, blackened buildings, increased the severity of fog, and obviously damaged people's health.
That's the pea soupers, yes?
Exactly.
These famous pea soupers.
You had loads of people getting rickets because they weren't getting enough sunlight. Mm. All industrial towns, this was a kind of endemic problem.
Right.
You had bronchitis. I mean, probably loads of things weren't even diagnosed. It was really bad. So what this act did, and it's classic kind of babble fodder, because the reason it worked is because it actually incentivized the alternative. So you had householders, because remember, everyone was burning coal in their chimneys. This was another thing. You had householders incentivized to use different fuels, and you had action on laggard local authorities who, you know, they were properly penalized. So it was good. But you're right, the air ain't clean yet. It's just a different kind of dirty.
Oh, you are awful, but I like you.
I want to take a step back from all of this, right? So it's 60 years since the UK did a thing to clean up its air, which took it ages to do, but it sort of did it in one bit. And then there is now Europe trying to clean up other bits of the air and stuff. Why, if you actually think about it, what is it that you think goes wrong in the heads of everyone? This isn't just a political thing, it's an everyone thing. Right, we get into our little boxes on wheels and we drive them around, and out the arse of this little box on wheel comes a pipe, and the pipe spews out into the air horrible stuff, right? And the horrible stuff is at the same level as a child's head, and the child walks past all smiley and happy with a balloon and breathes in the horrible stuff, right? And everyone goes, isn't living in civilization wonderful, right? But how has this come to pass? How is it, do you think, that we don't you wouldn't like that? The driver wouldn't get out of their car and go to the child and open their mouth up and get a funnel out and wee into the funnel, would they? Like, that's not a thing that would happen.
I really hope not. No,
no, they wouldn't. So then, why is it all right to drive a car past them?
Wow, what a question. I think. We're very good at blocking things out, aren't we? Because the reality
is... Sorry, I was miles away.
Very good, well done. We're very good at not thinking about the stuff that we don't want to think about because it's too difficult and hard. But also trading things off. Because cars, for an awful lot of people, are exceptionally convenient and quite fun. Therefore, we choose to not think too much about the pollution they may be causing. The other thing is that they are getting better. So cars built now pollute less than cars built 20 years ago.
Well, unless they're Volkswagen cars, yes?
Well, they just pollute less, if you see what I mean. I mean, they are less polluting. They're just
they pollute less more. Less.
Shut
more.
Up. No,
no,
what?
No, you're right. No, you're right. Yeah.
less. Yeah. They're less polluting, just not as much less polluting than they claim they are.
Right.
Anyway, it's... It's just we all do things which we know are bad, but we do them because we like the other side of it. We like the good stuff.
No, it's because we can get away with it. It's not that. Like, we wouldn't. We've created all of these social thingies whereby you don't go up to people in the street and punch them in the face and run away. But yet we then. But we do things that have the kind of same
happy
moral.
Slapping. People do happy slapping.
Happy slapping, yes. Or what was that thing? Neck nominating. That's something else, isn't it?
Yeah.
But we don't do that. We don't do one-on-one horrible stuff, but we do it at the kind of big, soupy, civilization-y type thing, don't we? Do we need to fix something about the way our brains work if we're ever going to stop ruining this planet or not?
Yes, probably, but how?
I don't know. Well, I'm asking you. This is your stuff. I don't know. No, I get the easy questions. I ask the questions.
I'm not trying to work out how to fix people's brains.
But isn't that the point? Like, this is all of this stuff about Yerp, right? And targets and things like that. And bureaucrats coming over here telling us what to do and setting us targets and stuff like that. And there's a whole load of people who go, that's not actually changing the way people think. We need to nudge them. We need to sort of do behavioural stuff. And we need to get them to do things in other ways. So instead of a government law that says you're not allowed to drive your car on a Sunday, instead you put signs up all around the town that you live in with a picture of a child having a funnel in its mouth into which someone is weeing and say, this is basically what you do if you drive your car on a Sunday, right? Same difference, but one is about triggering a different feeling in people.
Yes. Yeah, there's certainly a role for that, isn't there? And I think, you know, shock campaigning does have a place. And you look at the Think campaign, do you remember that? I think it was a nationwide thing. Certainly, if you were at a bus stop in London at any point in the last 5 years, you will have seen a poster, which is very evidently of a sort of young teenager, I suppose, dead on the road with their eyes wide open and the words "think!" exclamation mark next to it. And it's hard hitting, but I suppose you could do something equivalent for air pollution. And I guess, actually, one of the big problems here is that, unlike in 1952, which was when there was this huge piece of super, and that was the thing that really, really gave politicians the kick up the ass, basically, to do this properly, we can't see today's pollution. I mean, you can see it a bit, but you can't see nitrogen dioxide. You can't see many of the particulates. You can't. It's a thing in the air. Sure, people tell us it's there, but every single breath isn't one where we go, oh God, I've just inhaled a lung full of stuff which is going to give me cancer. So it's finding a way for people like me and others campaigning on this stuff to visualize the problem is I think key. But you've got to give people a sense of hope as well. It's all very well saying, okay, this is all terrible, look, you're all killing children or putting wee in their mouths for some bizarre reason concocted by you. But you probably need to give people a sense of, like, actually, this can be a better city, a better country, a better world. Play the better world music, Dave. I'm going to make an epic speech and get all emotional and cryy.
So, Ol.
Hello.
You know how 10 days ago or something, the UK decided it didn't want to be part of Europe no more? Does that
Independence
mean,
Day.
Independence Day, isn't it? Independence Day. Very good. Very exciting. 4th of July. Does that mean then that we aren't going to do anything to clean our air up? Because all of this stuff, I remember a man who we shall come to in a second, Mr. Boris Johnson, being told by Europe that he had to clean London's air up and not doing it. And, you know, you were just saying that the UK's tried to water down the things that Europe wanted to get it to do. So is it one of those things that when we're not in Europe no more, we just won't bother about?
I don't know. Maybe. I mean, there's no reason why out of Europe we couldn't do our own air pollution rules. And going back to the 1956 Act, that was pre-Europe. You know, we did stuff on air pollution pre-Europe. Mm-hmm. But it does look like, along with a lot of the environmental protections, that, you know, maybe the UK government might try and delete it because, let's
face it,
that's
what they do, isn't
it? That's what they do. And also, it's only because of the kind of threat and the fines coming down from Europe that the UK government has started to do the pitiful amount it is currently doing to try and clean up some pollutants in the UK. But I don't know, maybe it's a good thing for Europeans as a whole, because there won't be the UK in these negotiations watering down the ambition to stop killing people. So maybe we should get out of Europe and save some other Europeans and just sacrifice ourselves to the great nitrogen dioxide bonfire.
Reasons to be cheerful.
So reasons to be cheerful, Dave.
Hooray!
Cheer! Genuine cheer. This one isn't even ironic. There is a real, real reason to be cheerful. And I know what you usually do is find the misery lurking underneath it, but I don't think you're going to this time, because the UK government have done a good thing on climate change. Despite it all, they have agreed to cut emissions in the UK by 2030, by 57% based on 1990 levels. And if that isn't enough to get your special area all warm and fuzzy, I don't know what is.
My special area is tingling with glee, although I'll tell you why. Because this was the sort of thing. Now, look, credit where it is due, right? So just a week before the government decided it was going to cut emissions by 57% on 1990 levels by the year 2032.
You know how people sometimes accuse people on the left of not having very good emotional stories and struggling to connect with people. Do you think sentences like that are part of the problem?
No, this is my special area is resoundingly interested in this sort of thing. And the reason this is significant is A, because it's not a bit of European law, it's a bit of UK law. It's a thing called the UK Climate Change Act, which requires the UK, irrespective of what EU does, to cut its emissions by 80% by 2050, which is good, isn't it? So this is the UK showing that Europe doesn't have to tell it everything to do and it can just get on and do it. And second, because people like me were a bit worried that maybe the whole climate change thing would go for a duck now that we're all worried about, Brexit and stuff. And so these two things are good, yes?
Yeah, that is good. I am genuinely surprised that they didn't find an excuse not to do this.
Except. So,
you said this was going to be cheer.
It is cheery and well done, very well done, etc. But it is not as high a target as what it should be. There we are. Put that in your pipe and smoke it. It is consistent only with like a vague chance of avoiding killing everything in the next century.
Yeah.
But that's all right.
Yeah.
I'll take the small
Frankly, verses. We'll take that at the moment. No, you know, you are right, because what this doesn't really take into consideration is that big hoo-ha that happened in Paris at the end of last year. God, that seems like a lifetime ago now. But do you remember that brief moment of hope when the world came together and said, do you know what, we're going to try and keep global warming to 1.5 degrees? That was good. And what this target doesn't really do is reflect 1.5 degrees. It isn't consistent, so it's not tough enough.
No, but it is still a target much tougher than what Europe has got, much tougher than what most other countries in the world has got, and it's a thing what we have done and what it appears that, at least for now, we are going to continue doing. So, just for a minute, credit where it's due, and I'm going to wave my Union Jack.
Look at you.
Of the week. Well, I must tell you, my friends, you who have waited faithfully for the punchline of this speech, that having consulted colleagues and in view of the circumstances in Parliament, I have concluded that person cannot be me.
Oh, Schadenfreude. This is a section we haven't done for a while.
No.
Speaks for itself, really. My favourite ever Schadenfreude was our Tony Abbott special, episode 23A.
That's right, yep.
Yes, I'm getting good at this. Where we just laughed and laughed and laughed because the world's biggest climate knob had been booted out of office, which is kind of similar to what's happened this week to the UK's one of the leading climate knobs in the UK, Boris Johnson, has had his entire world fall down about him. Thanks to his old chum, Michael Gove, who did what was, an admirably sort of elegant knifing in the back to pursue his own political ambitions. Wowee.
Yeah, and this is, for people who don't really know who Boris Johnson is, count yourself very lucky, and hopefully you never will again. But he was a guy who, well, he was a guy who Ol had once said this about.
He's all-round self-publicist and the future leader of the Conservative Party, by all accounts.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah, well, look.
Mm. Oh, actually, this is the same alone. Ol. This is the same Ol who actually also once said this.
All right, so I've got a prediction. Very simple one. Ed Miliband's going to be Prime Minister.
Yeah, look, we've been over this. I was wrong.
You was wrong.
I was wrong.
And you're getting wronger all the time, aren't you?
I was wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, you was wrong. And you was wrong about Boris Johnson becoming Prime Minister. But in your defence, oh floppy-haired bastion of beauty, so was everyone else, because pretty much no one saw this coming.
Exactly. I mean, I wasn't kind of taking a punt there. That's what everyone was saying. But anyway, I was wrong. That's it. What everyone is saying is no defence.
We talked about, Boris Johnson has been a running theme throughout this year and a half of Babbel. We talked about him in episode 18, when Arabella read out how much Boris Johnson likes fracking. We mentioned him just last week when talking about the fact that he'd written a piece for The Telegraph in his column about 4 years ago in February, saying there's snow on my flower pot, therefore climate change can't be real, can it? And we haven't talked very much about, but linking to what we were talking about earlier, about how he has been really rubbish on air pollution in London. Yes.
Yeah, massively rubbish. And the worst
when he was the mayor of it.
Had a great year, has he? You know, not being mayor of London, not being prime minister. Bad luck, eh? When he was mayor, he did do some stuff on air pollution that took the situation forward. He did drive some things forward.
Sorry. That took the situation forward. He did drive the things forward.
God, you'd have thought I'd have learned by now, wouldn't you?
Bloody hell.
So sorry. But what he also did, fairly scandalously, it has now been revealed, is he didn't publish a report which just showed just how much air pollution disproportionately affects people living in poorer areas. And he just sat on it. And he's a big man, so when he sits on things, no one can see them. Disgusting, really.
How big was the report? I like the idea of people coming into his office for a meeting and he's sitting there like 12 feet up in the air going, oh, waffle, piffle, poffle.
So that is just about it for Sustainable 55. Thank you very much, Dave, for your grilling, your beauty and your militant veganism.
Thank you very much, Ol, for knowing about stuff.
If you would like to get in touch and tell us that, in fact, I don't know what I'm talking about, please do.
Please do. We'll set up a hotline.
We have got an email address, which is hello@sustainababble.fish. You can tweet us at The Babble Wagon or just search Facebook for Sustainababble. We're going to have a little break. I know we've not been back very long, but we're going on our holidays.
Not together.
I'm going to Europe. I wonder how that will go. So we're going to be back on the 24th of July. We're going to be off for a couple of weeks. But fear not, there's plenty of Babbel in the back catalogue to get your little lug holes round if you haven't already.
Indeed. Thank you, Ol. Have a lovely time in Europe and bring me back some democracy.
I certainly will, or at least some fromage. Bye.
Bye.